and welcome to The Sector, the radio show podcast discussing nonprofits, social justice, and activism. With me, your host, Ethan Clow, broadcasting here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Well, I hope everybody had a fantastic week. It was an interesting one, to say the least. We had a bit of a technical issue here down at CITR. Unfortunately, those problems have been a bit too common lately, and like before, it sort of delayed the posting of the podcast. So for episode 15, if you haven't heard it yet, it is available. If you go to sectorpodcast.wordpress.com, you can find it in its usual spot. I do apologize, though, for any listeners who were waiting to catch up on The Sector. That problem has been hopefully corrected. We're moving to new servers here at the station, so hopefully that means for you, podcasts will be posted quickly and efficiently, and you know what? They'll be there, and they'll stay there. So it should be a nice change of pace here down at the station, and for all you listeners out there. Now, given that we talked about some pretty important issues last episode on The Sector, including the recent controversy around the CRA and charities here in Canada, particularly charities that are engaging in any kind of political advocacy or activism, or are very critical of our current government, well, there's been some concern that there's been a bit of a crackdown on these organizations, that they are being preemptively shut up by audits from the CRA, and that these audits are politically motivated and are, in fact, not based on real charity law, but is part of sort of this political effort to silent dissent. Now, it's a pretty extreme position to take, but when you look at some of the stories that have come out of the news recently, including some pretty disturbing comments about what is a charity's goals, what are their missions, what should they be, what is not included, as well as the CRA and their own sort of justification for this crackdown on nonprofits, it has raised a few alarm bells. So we discussed this on last week's show, episode 15, and again, available now to download to your heart's content. So we're going to retouch on some of these points, get back into the sort of the topic of the CRA, and what exactly is a nonprofit's purview? Where does its mission and scope begin and end when it comes to the question of politics? You remember that on last week's show, the big question of the week, where we pose a question to our listening audience that invites their critical feedback, their commentary, and their discussion. Well, we asked about, is it time to overhaul the Canadian charity system that limits political advocacy by nonprofits and charities? Now, what that means is a charity or a nonprofit is prevented from spending more than 10% of their resources on political activity. And you might ask yourself, well, what does that mean? What do the resources translate into? Does that mean cash? Does that mean employee time? What are we talking about here? That's not very clear. No one really knows exactly how that's determined. And again, when it comes to political activity, there's many different types. What exactly constitutes political activity? Does it have to be advocacy, or could it be activism? What's the difference? How does that play out in terms of examining a charity's ledgers and examining their budget and examining what they spend their money on? And again, what about charities that blatantly do engage in political advocacy? We've talked about some of the liberal charities, for example, the environmental charities, the freedom of speech, human rights organizations. But what about charities that are religious in origin and that they focus on not so much restricting human freedom, but advocating for a conservative worldview? Many of these organizations encourage their congregations, their supporters, to vote a particular way. They encourage them to donate to a political party. They provide a platform for exposing the views and beliefs of a conservative worldview. Is that not also political activity of some sort. So that is something to consider when we look at charity law. Do we want to further loosen the ties that bind a charity's hands? That could in turn make it easier for a conservative religious organization to get even more political. Is that what we want? These are all, well, there's no right answer, of course, but it does provoke some interesting thought. So we'll dive into the big question a bit later on in the show. Before that, we have some interesting topics to discuss, including taking a little bit of a look at the American point of view. We'll take a look at what's going on with the IRS and nonprofits in America, and maybe we can learn something, you know, we could apply here in Canada, or perhaps the CRA could apply here in Canada. So we'll take a look and see what the Yanks are up to. Also, big news, I will be doing a very special episode of Radio Free Thinker next week, which airs Tuesdays at 3 o'clock. I'll be rejoining my good friend Don McLennigan to discuss the 100-year anniversary of the start of World War I. This, of course, was the war that, well, many would argue, made Canada Canada. So we'll discuss the history that goes along with this pretty amazing anniversary. Can you believe it? 100 years since World War I. That's pretty shocking when you think about it. We'll get into those topics as well, and also some usual skeptical, critical thinking, sciencey talk, so be sure to tune in for Radio Free Thinker. We'll post some links on our show notes to that for, I guess, our next week's show, and hopefully you'll be able to listen to both. Well, why don't we take a quick break here on the show, and we'll return after this.
The federal government is trying to ram through a set of electronic surveillance laws that will invade your privacy and cost you money. The plan is to force every phone and internet provider to surrender our personal information to authorities without a warrant, the worst part of their invasive, all-encompassing surveillance scheme. Is that you have to pay for it out of your own pocket. Send Ottawa a message by signing the petition at stopspying.ca. That's www.stopspying.ca. Thank you.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum!
Really?
Kill!
That's
really kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard Tommy! I hate him! I hate
okay,
him!
Well,
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And we are back on The Sector, broadcasting here on CITR with me, Ethan Clow. Episode 16 of The Sector, discussing nonprofits and charities, particularly what they are allowed to get up to. Now, we all have heard the recent news about the CRA, the Canadian Revenue Agency, and the crackdown on nonprofits and charities. Is it politically motivated? Is it purely a result of these charities breaking the rules and not playing right when it comes to their advocacy? Or is this part of a larger attempt to put the chill on the advocacy sector? Now, this is, as I said before, controversial and not exactly likely to resolve itself into a clear picture of what's going on. But there's been some recent news developments since last week's show, where we talked about this at length. So let's take a look at what's been happening recently, and maybe we can get a better idea of just what's going on in the charitable sector here in Canada. Several articles appeared over the last couple of days, including this one in the Globe and Mail, where the Canadian Revenue Agency made a statement that they are not acting in a politically biased way with this new round of special politically focused audits of charities. They've actually said that it's been designed to balance on the political spectrum rather than focus on groups with particular leanings. Now, in theory, that's not too hard to disprove or, well, to verify. We can simply look at the charities that have been audited. Now, unfortunately, this information is relatively confidential. Unless the charities, choose to disclose this, we may not necessarily know. We do, however, know that certain charities, particularly environmental charities, human rights organizations, various political advocacy organizations, have been audited. The common denominator is that these organizations have all been very critical of our current government. Now, if the CRA is saying, well, we are also going to be auditing conservative organizations, we're going to be auditing organizations that have been speaking in favor of government, well then, I think that at that point, once we see it happening, we can confirm this. And until it does happen, it's difficult to take their word for it. In so much is that we do know that this funding, this budget did come from the conservative government, and that, frankly, this government has shown a history of, how can we put this delicately, of being a bit heavy-handed when it comes to laying down the authority and cracking down on dissent. Now, the agency claims that they are going to be funding audits of about 60 charities designed to get a cross-section of Canadian nonprofits by region, by category, and making sure that they follow the rules. So, in theory, it's justifiable. It's an important thing that charities need to be mindful of. And it harkens back to our big question, which has been continued over from last week's show, is that, is it time to overhaul the Canadian legal system when it comes to charities? Namely, is it time to change the fact that charities are not allowed to spend more than 10% of their resources on political activities? Getting back to what the CRA is saying, in a quote in one of the articles, "We are not targeting charities that have particular political leanings," was by Kathy Hawara, Director General of the CRA's Charity Directorate. Now, again, as I mentioned, there's really no evidence that right-leaning charities have come under the same kind of microscope. And in fact, indeed, many have made the argument that that's actually a blatant lie, and that the only organizations that are being focused with this level of scrutiny are indeed left-leaning organizations. And again, now, this is where the sort of charity law and the jargon of it can be a bit confusing. It's very unlikely that the CRA would sort of shut down an organization. As in, auditors come in, they look at the books, and, they put one of those big foreclosed signs on the doors. Usually that doesn't happen. Typically the way something like this works is that an audit goes over a certain course of time in which the charity is given repeated warnings, letters, grading that allows it to correct its errors. Now, the reason this is potentially really important for a charity is that they have to spend money to correct these problems. They have to bring in outside help to help manage the audit, to collect documentation, to collect receipts, to collect, well, the whole budget basically has to be justified. And these audits can go back years and years. So it's not a simplistic process. You don't just open a drawer and there's all the documents right there and you just plop them down and say, well, on October 4th, 1993, we spent X amount of dollars on this. It's a lot more in-depth than that. Now, I've actually gone through auditing with a nonprofit, and believe me, you do get phone calls at 10 o'clock at night saying, hey, do you remember that purchase we made like 3 years ago? Do you happen to have the receipt for that? And in most cases, you don't. So you have to go back and you have to double check your ledgers. You have to be very careful. Now, all this extra work requires somebody there to do it. And you're taking time away from what the charity normally does. Employees are not out there doing activism. They're not out there doing community engagement. They're not promoting their mission and cause, they're busy looking up documents, combing through financial statements, and trying to justify why 3 years ago you had dinner with the mayor. Now, these issues, not to say that they are trivial or that they shouldn't at some point be addressed, but there is a secondary effect to an audit, and that is the time and cost to a charity when they go through the audit. Even a charity that, let's say, has nothing to hide, they've had a perfect record, they haven't engaged in any potentially unethical political dealings, they're really sort of a perfect straight and narrow charity. They're the model charity. Even they will have to probably bring in outside help to manage the audit. They will likely have to have some kind of legal experts go over the documents and make sure they're at least presentable to the CRA. So this is time and energy that's being used. Now, if you're not in this enviable position of being sort of the perfect charity, that effort, those resources are going to be a lot higher. And this is where the suppression argument comes into play, is that by forcing these audits on certain charities, they're basically preventing them from doing the work that they should be doing, the work that sometimes involves criticizing the government, and instead they're busy crossing their T's and dotting their I's and going through, you know, budgets and such like that. One of the people who's been quoted quite a bit in these articles is Gareth Kirby, who is a former journalist and researched this very topic for a master's thesis at the Railroads University. He expressed doubt that the charitable sector is being unbiasedly looked at by the CRA. In fact, he suggested that three specific charitable sectors are being singled out: environmental groups, development and human rights charities, and charities that receive donations from labor groups. Quote, "I haven't seen a lot of evidence of right-leaning charities being audited for political activities," he said in an interview. Now, of course, the CRA has denied that there's any kind of political motivation. They've denied that the Prime Minister's office, nor the Finance Minister, nor the Revenue Minister, nor anyone has a say in what charities get targeted for these audits. The exact quote from the article, "The decision is made by me and my team," she said, adding that confidentiality rules prevent her from addressing some of the concerns raised by Canadians or discussing particular groups being audited. Now, this is where we can kind of get into the sort of the tinfoil hat territory that I mentioned last week. It's true that she's not allowed to go out there and say, oh, by the way, such charities include X, Y, and Z, because these audits may be happening behind the scenes. And I don't mean that in kind of a nefarious way. I mean that the CRA may send a letter to, say, a conservative or right-leaning charity and be like, you know, your budgets are out of order. We're concerned about how much political advocacy you're doing. Please forward us, you know, the following documents. And, you know, that could happen behind the scenes. And there's no reason for that to necessarily happen in the public's eye. Of course, in this situation, it would be helpful, I think, to the CRA and perhaps put some minds at ease in the nonprofit sector to know that it's not just environmental charities and human rights organizations that are getting the strong look of the CRA. Let's take a quick break here on the sector. I will return after this with some more discussion of the big question, as well as how are things going on in America with American charities and the IRS? What can we learn from the IRS? Stay tuned.
Jazz is a word that means many different things to many different people. The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
¶¶ class, shut up. Shut up and listen to me right now. This is Fred Schneider, and you're listening to CITR. Shut up and listen to this radio station.
And we're back on episode 16 of The Sector here on CITR with me, Ethan Clough, discussing all manner of things controversial about the CRA and the current nonprofit landscape. Now, before we get onto the big question and this interesting story from America from the IRS, there is one other small little thing that I can't let this go without, again, kicking on the CRA a little bit. If anyone from the CRA is listening, I just want to say that I think you guys are fantastic, and I don't actually mean any of the horrible things I'm about to say about you. So just clear that up. We're all friends here. Good friends. Yes. Anyway, let's continue on with this interesting story that came out in the last week or so, determining poverty in the CRA. Yes, what does poverty have to do with the CRA? Well, as a recent story broke, the CRA has made a ruling for a certain nonprofit charity here in Canada, Oxfam Canada. Now, Oxfam filed papers with Industry Canada to renew its nonprofit status, as required by October 17th of this year under a law passed in 2011. Now, the Ottawa-based Oxfam initially submitted wording that its purpose as a charity is, quote, to prevent and relieve poverty, vulnerability, and suffering by improving the conditions of individuals whose lives, livelihood, security, or well-being are at risk. That sounds like a pretty honorable and good cause. I think that most of our listeners would be pretty okay with making a donation to Oxfam based on that mission statement for sure. The International Development Group, which was founded in 1963, spends about $32 million each year on humanitarian relief and aid in Africa, Asia, Central, and South America, with a special emphasis on women's rights. Now, the submission to Industry Canada needed the approval of the charity's directorate. Remember them? At the Canadian Revenue Agency. And this is where, well, things went a little bit strange. The agency informed Oxfam that, quote, preventing poverty is not an acceptable goal. That preventing poverty is not acceptable. Huh, that's interesting. Why? Well, relieving poverty is charitable, but preventing it is not, Oxfam was told. Preventing poverty could mean providing for a class of beneficiaries that are not poor. Right, that would be terrible. Oxfam Canada's executive director called the exchange an absurd conversation, and I agree, and I'm not even part of the conversation. I'm just telling you about the conversation, and I think it's absurd. So again, let's just sort of rewind and sort of look at this again. So Oxfam is a charity. They have a long history. They've been around since 63. They spend a lot of money. They're clearly well-connected. They probably have a very good track record. I'm sure that you could look up their information on the UN or Managing Canada. You could find their information online. Let's be frank. They probably sound like they're really on the ball. Anyway, as charities do, they need to renew their status. They need to renew their policies or their place as a nonprofit in a charity. And so they submit to the CRA, they present their credentials, they present their status and their financial statements, all of that, all that great jazz. And, you know, the CRA comes and looks at it and goes, okay, well, yeah, this looks good. You're obeying the laws of charity here in Canada. Your organization does what we determine a charity should be doing. You're up on the board, you're, you know, not pocketing the money, the donations are going to their cause. Imagine Canada comes along and, you know, they post their financial statements and they get a good rating. So yeah, that's sort of the process. But then there's this preventing poverty thing. Now, let's talk a little bit about preventing poverty. What does that even mean? Well, we can think of poverty in many different ways. I mean, here on the sector, we've talked about it in terms of economic poverty, educational poverty, poverty as the result of political or social factors, poverty as a result of health and well-being, poverty as the result of, well, you name it, anything can really cause poverty. And if you attack the system that is causing poverty, if you can secure that we have a social safety net, that children don't drop out of school, become uneducated and unemployable, and have to turn to a life on the street or perhaps crime, you can create a better society because you are addressing the systemic problems. You're focusing your efforts in ways that can redirect the potential for people to fall down that poverty hole. You are preventing somebody from making a bad decision. You're preventing people from being even in a position where they have to make a bad position because you are addressing a concern that prevents poverty, as it were. Now, does this seem like a useful and acceptable use of a charity's resources? I think so. Now, according to Oxfam, the CRA interpretation was that preventing poverty may or may not involve poor people. And if it doesn't involve poor people, then it can't be charitable. Initially you could say, well, a group of millionaires could get together to prevent their own poverty, but that would not be deemed a charitable purpose. And again, that's such an extreme example. A group of people could get together who are not millionaires, who are lower middle class people, and they could plan a community garden or a carpool or a way to sort of jointly buy groceries. This could also help prevent poverty. Now, if this organization, if this group of people decided to become an organization, if they tried to incorporate and apply their methods of saving money and supporting each other, why would that not be considered charitable? The sort of extreme position being taken by the CRA, well, has raised a lot of eyebrows because, again, because of what we've previously been talking about, the CRA cracking down on certain charities, this just comes at a really bad time. It makes it look like the CRA is kind of being bullies and to Oxfam in this case. Not surprisingly, the CRA prevailed in their argument and Oxfam had to change their mission statement. They are still committed to ending poverty, but the charitable purposes do not use the word end or prevent. They use the word alleviate. Now, to argue semantics, is there a huge difference between the word alleviate and prevent? I don't know. I don't know if that's worth the CRA's attention, frankly. According to the CRA, there is a big difference. A spokesperson for the organization said that legal precedences mean that charities cannot help people not already impoverished from falling into poverty. Purposes that relieve poverty are charitable because they provide relief only to eligible beneficiaries. The courts have not found the risk of poverty as being equivalent to actually being in need. Therefore, as the courts have indicated, an organization cannot be registered with the explicit purpose of preventing poverty. Now, that could strike some as just a fancy way of saying we don't understand how poverty works. And indeed, it sort of seems that way. The CRA doesn't understand how poverty works, or how relieving poverty works, or why you relieve poverty. And indeed, it doesn't seem to understand that poverty is not something that is a domino effect, in which case you have a problem. The problem tips over, becomes an issue. So you go over and you put it back. And then it happens again somewhere else, and you pick it up and put it back. And it happens somewhere else, and you pick it up and put it back. And it's this constant game of picking up the pieces, putting them back together, and you just kind of repeat as needed. But if you can address the issue, if you can find out why these pieces keep falling apart, If you can find out why the problem keeps happening, why it keeps persisting, indeed, if you can solve that problem, if you can answer that question and understand why poverty keeps persisting, you may in fact solve the problem of poverty. Now, just because the courts haven't quite figured that out yet, or that they're approaching it from a very legalese point of view, in which case there is a state of poverty, and that there are people who exist in the state, and that the state before poverty does not count as poverty. If that's the definition that we're taking, if that's the kind of rigorous examination that we're advocating here, that the CRA is suggesting, I think they've done more harm to the nonprofit sector with simply that mindset than any amount of audits they can do. You let everybody know, but don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Your mother, she's an heiress, owns a block in St. John's Wood, and your father, be there with her if he only could. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. I swear to God, I'm not wearing just my underwear right now. This is Beth.
Hi, this is Beth Ditto from The Gossip, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. No, yeah, this is the best thing in the world. You guys are going to be blown away.
Now, I mentioned the IRS and their role and their response to dealing with the nonprofit question when it comes to expressing political views. Now, the IRS was nurturing an idea designed to restrict these speech rights of nonprofit groups in America, including groups like Alliance for Justice, the NAACP, and the National Rifle Association. They commissioned a study on the effectiveness of what these measures would do and what people across the political landscape thought about this. And the message overwhelmingly to the IRS was, don't do it. In fact, remarkably, people on both sides of the political spectrum were adamant in agreement that the IRS stepping into the arena of censorship, of stepping into the arena of policing what a nonprofit can say and do in terms of advocacy, is the wrong move to make. The study by the Center for Competitive Politics examined the record-setting number of comments which were sent to the IRS in response to its proposed regulations limiting the activities of nonprofit advocacy groups. The center analyzed a statistically large sample of the 143,852 comments that were publicly available as of July 8th and reviewed every comment filed by an organization, expert, or public official. What they discovered was, again, overwhelming opposition from across the political spectrum. A remarkable 87% of all public comments sampled opposed the rule making outright, with 64% coming from organizations, experts, and public officials in firm opposition. Even comments favoring changes to the current regulations was deeply unpopular. In all, 97% of the comments were opposed to the rule in varying degrees. That's pretty, well, that's pretty amazing when you think about it. That kind of agreement is rarely seen across the political spectrum, especially in America, where we know they love their political spectrum. One of the big issues was that citizens, organizations, and people on both sides of the political spectrum realized that the proposed rules would shut down a number of common nonpartisan functions that nonprofits perform to promote social welfare. For example, the rule would reclassify voter registration drives, get out the vote drives, meet the candidate forums, grassroots lobbying, elected officials and candidates, and the production of nonpartisan voter guides as, quote, candidate-related political activity. Once placed under that label, those activities would become subject to limits on political activity. Now, again, I think that reasonable people here in Canada and in America, and they exist, would agree that that's actually a really important role for charities to be playing. And I think we could even go as far as to say that charities don't do enough of that kind of work. If your organization is promoting human rights or harm reduction drug policy or the environment, it makes sense that you should be allowed to tell your supporters and your donors and your community, these are the political party members that support us. These are the policies that we need to advocate for. This is the way that you can write to your MP, that you can write to your congressman. This is the way that you can engage with politics to help make a difference in society. And that's something that shouldn't a nonprofit and a charity be able to do? And I'm voicing that question to the interwebs. What do you think? Is that not an area where a nonprofit should be allowed and indeed encouraged to venture into and to advise people and to provide that educational service? What I think is really great about this story and what this demonstrates is a willingness to listen by the IRS. They put out these potential rules. They allowed public opinion. They allowed responses from the sector, from experts, from politicians, from people who are involved in the sector. And 87% of the public comments oppose the rule. 97% of the comments from organizations, legal experts, and elected officials pointed out there are really big flaws here. And the IRS decided to revise the rules. They actually listened. The IRS listened. They got feedback, and they considered the feedback, and they modulated their thinking and incorporated the feedback and changed their minds. Wow. That's got to be something. So CRA, if you're listening, and, you know, we know that you are, you should look at this and say, hey, maybe we can try that changing our mind thing too. Because when you go out there with the best of intentions and you propose new rules and new regulations and you're trying to formulate a way to encompass all these different diverse groups who are all working to make the world a better place in many different ways, you know, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to accidentally tread on someone's toes. You're going to make it really difficult for certain aspects of the sector to operate effectively. And it's going to be a process of give and take and examination and research. And, you know, putting the question to people who are industry experts, putting the question to the public who, you know, are the ones who fund these organizations, that's a good idea. That's a good thing to do because these are the people who, for all intents and purposes, are the stakeholders of these organizations. And they have a right to understand how the IRS or how the CRA is going to evaluate them and determine whether or not these organizations can continue to operate as they have been. So when the CRA, you know, gets negative press like it has been, and there's this public uproar, rather than sort of denying everything and, you know, covering your ears with your hands and going, la, 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 you know, maybe the correct response is to kind of go, huh, you know, maybe, just maybe, we're wrong. Maybe we need to revise our thinking on this. Maybe there's a better way of doing this and making sure that the integrity and the rules are followed, but also that we're doing so in a way that allows feedback and evaluation into our process. You know, that would be really, really nice, I think, for a lot of the nonprofits out there who are feeling a little bit embattled right now. Now, another way that the IRS has earned some faint praise from me here in the sector, and hopefully from you as well, is they've started a new process in which they are no longer going to screen about 80% of the organizations seeking tax-exempt charitable status each year. Now, on the surface, that seems perhaps a little crazy. I mean, there certainly is a lot of opportunity for organizations to sort of abuse that charity status. And yet, by making this move, the IRS is planning on making it a lot easier for the creation of small charities and doing away with a review intended to counter fraud and prevent political and other non-charitable groups from misusing the tax code. So on the one hand, it's easier now if you want to start up a new charity. You're not going to have to deal with sort of the intense scrutiny of the IRS. On the, I guess, negative side, if you want to set up a fraudulent charity, it's now a little bit easier to do so. But again, this sort of relates back to the CRA in that if you are going to set up a fraudulent charity, there already is a lot of laws and regulations in place to help prevent that sort of thing. So I guess the question ultimately is, what is the net gain for the IRS or for charities in America without this kind of extra step? Interestingly enough, the trade-off that the IRS is thinking about is that this efficiency will translate into a better system of review of bigger nonprofits. It will clear a 66,000 application backlog that has resulted in year-long waits for groups seeking to start a new charity, and it will allow for them to focus more energy on the larger charities. And let's face it, the larger charities are frankly the ones that, can cause the most problems in terms of fraud and, breaking the rules. Of course, certain charities and groups in America are a little bit concerned with this new direction, saying that, it could undermine the trust and the legitimate reputation of law-abiding charities. That being said, if you're going to be a fraud, if you're going to go that far to become a fraudulent charity, or even just kind of do some kind of shady political money laundering or whatever it is they're planning on doing, is an extra 10 hours of paperwork really going to put you off? Is that going to be like the straw that broke the camel's back, that you're going to say, well, I was going to create a fraudulent charity, but all that paperwork, it was only going to save me like millions of dollars in stolen tax dollars credits or whatever. But now that that's changed, oh yeah, for sure, I'm definitely going to create a fraudulent charity. So I don't know, really the long-term effect of this will have to be looked at in a couple of years to see where this progression is going. The IRS in many ways is kind of having sort of an opposite problem with the CRA. They've recently been focusing a lot on conservative political organizations like the Tea Party charities, which have been funneling money into these conservative political movements. What's interesting about that is the uniform disagreement that the IRS provoked from charities across the spectrum with regards to sort of new rules and new political rulings. And I think that gets back to the rules once again. The IRS proposed new ways of defining what political activity is all about. And the sector said uniformly, no, we can't operate with those rules. Changing the rules are great. Cracking down on people who break those rules, that's great. If we're going to adapt to a new system, though, the system has to make sense. And, tie this all back together again, that's what today's big question of the week is all about. A continuation of last week's big question of the week. Now, the big question is where I propose a question or commentary to our listening audience and ask for their feedback, their thoughts, their reflections. Let us know what you think. You can take part by commenting on our blog at sectorpodcast.wordpress.com. You can email us at sectorpodcast@gmail.com. And you can comment on Facebook or tweet us on Twitter. On Facebook, we are at Sector Podcast, facebook.com/sectorpodcast. And on Twitter, at Sector Podcast, or at me, Ethan Clow. I'm on Twitter as well. So last week, I asked the question, is it time to change the political law that limits political activity for charities and nonprofits in Canada. The IRS obviously looking at this issue as well, in light of their own crackdown on political organizations that are getting a bit too close and cozy with charities and nonprofits. Now, here in Canada, the rules say that you cannot devote more than 10% of your resources to political activity. But what is political activity? According to the CRA, political activity is the endorsement or the condemnation of a political party or organization. It is the direct taking action in the political process by deliberately, by clearly making a political statement that is partisan or either endorses or criticizes a political party. So in other words, if an organization is publicly saying, don't vote for so-and-so, that can be considered political activity. Now, notice it doesn't outright ban this. It says that no more than 10% of its resources can be devoted to this. So I guess the big question then is, what are the resources? Now, we could look at a charity and say it has its fundraising department, it has its marketing department, it has the activists who put that money to good use. Where in that process do you count the political advocacy? I mean, in theory, you could have an organization that's quite wealthy. Maybe they own a warehouse somewhere, and they staff it with 200 volunteers who make political phone calls, you know, advocating politically. Does that count as resources if they're volunteers? They're not getting paid. They're not taking up the budget. I mean, I guess you got to keep the lights on, but still. But of course, you know, volunteerism, that does count. The CRA does look at that. But to quantify it, to explain it? I mean, you can't put that on a spreadsheet and say, you know, 18 hours of volunteer hours was spent talking about politics, therefore that equates to X amount of resources being spent. It's too vague. It's not defined enough. In fact, most experts agree that if you're ever in that position, you better hire a charity lawyer, because the law gets complicated and obtuse, and it's not really easy to make a clear understanding of what constitutes that political advocacy. And again, I mean, to a certain extent, do we even want that kind of limitation? If an organization's goal is to advocate on behalf of the environment, and a political organization is advocating or saying that they're going to build new factories, new coal mining, new oil and gas, is that environmental charity just supposed to shut up? Are they not supposed to talk about that? If we flip it around, let's say that you have an organization that's dedicated to promoting traditional family values, and you have a political organization that comes into power, a political party, political politician themselves, and they say that they are going to spend a significant amount of money, of taxpayer money, building a gay education center where people can go and learn about being gay and having two dads and adopting, you know, different ethnicity children. And you're going to have all these strange new ideas about family values and family roles and all this sort of thing. Are these organizations not allowed to criticize that, to make a point about it in political discourse? I mean, we may not agree with a sort of conservative, traditional organization that's advocating to repress the rights of others. That, of course, would contravene, you know, Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms. But if they're criticizing a political party that's devoting more resources to a progressive agenda when it comes to maybe gays and lesbians or harm reduction drug policy or socialist economics, then shouldn't they be allowed to criticize that political party? Shouldn't they be allowed to try to energize their supporters by saying, donate to us so that we can advocate so that we can provide policy alternatives, regardless of how that is going to be instituted through our activism and through our mission statement? Should they not be allowed to at least do that? I mean, I don't know. I don't particularly like the idea of that happening, but I don't understand how we can deny those groups that option and complain when environmental groups are not given that ability as well. I guess the question then becomes, what does it mean to be a nonprofit in Canada? And are we going to have different standards for different charities? And I'm using nonprofit and charity almost interchangeably, and I probably shouldn't, but you know what I'm talking about here. If we're going to have different sets of rules and we're going to have different sets of standards of what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable, that's going to create more headache and it's going to create more problems down the road. So then the question becomes, why not just do away with that system? Why not develop a more transparent system? Maybe charities can do, say, 25% political activity, but that has to be transparently disclosed to their donors. It has to be transparently disclosed in their annual budget statements, so that if you're donating to an organization that does engage in political activities, you know about it. And you have to be comfortable with that. And that, I mean, that's about trust and that's about building a relationship. That puts the onus back on the charity to earn those donations. And it's not sort of flying under the radar that, by the way, when you donate to such and such, we're going to take a small amount of that money and funnel it into our political activities. So, I mean, it sidesteps that blindsided, that kind of questionable ethical framework. But again, what do you think, listeners? What are your thoughts on this? I mean, this whole topic, this whole question has been really getting a lot of attention lately. So I'm really curious to see what you have to say. And again, you can email us at sectorpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us on Twitter at sectorpodcast or at me, Ethan Clow. I'll post the show notes for today's episode once it's up and loaded. And again, crossing our fingers on that one. In the meantime, let us know and think about this. And you know, share it on Facebook. Do a bit of surfing around and see what you think about the general feel. Like, what are some of the commentary that's happening out there in the newspapers, on talk radio? Is it time to rethink the whole process? Or maybe not. Maybe it's not time to do that. Maybe we need to stiffen the laws. Maybe we need to honestly really kind of address the fact that charities are getting too political. The changing face of the sector continues to arouse critical thought and complicated questions, which is just the way that we like it here on the sector. Well, we're running out of time, so my thanks once again for everyone who tuned in. This has been episode 16, a fantastic time. I really love putting these things together and chatting with you, and I hope that you enjoy listening to them, and I hope that I'm actually providing you with some interesting, thoughtful discourse, and it's not just my attempt to rant crazily into the microphone, although let's face it, that's fun too. If you want to hear more of me, and who doesn't, tune in to Radio Free Thinker next week, Tuesday at 3 o'clock here on CITR, of course. And I'll be rejoining my good pal Don, and we're going to be discussing the 100-year anniversary of Canada entering the First World War. So much of our nation's history, of our identity as Canadians, was defined during that conflict. So we'll discuss sort of the ramifications, the cultural ramifications. And, we might talk a little bit about nonprofits and charities as well. So tune in for that, too. Anyway, this is Ethan Clow saying thank you once again for tuning in. Have a great weekend. Long weekend, actually. Have a great long weekend. And see you next week on The Sector and on Radio Free Thinker as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.